You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Hey, Google.
Stop.
All right. Well, welcome back, Retro Clubbers. Here I go again on yet another one of our Essential Movie Podcast episodes. Actually, I got quite a bit that's happened since the last time I spoke to you. I almost said we talked, but I don't know. You really don't talk back, do you? You just kind of listen. You're good listeners. I appreciate that. Continue to be that way. That's a good trait to have. But a lot has happened since the last time that I recorded one of these. Specifically, I went on the European business trip. So I got the chance to see London and Amsterdam. And quite a bit to talk about. I'm going to kind of stop myself from ranting about a situation that just happened yesterday where my daughter's car had gotten egged and then I had cleaned it up and then I decided to rant about it on our local Facebook community chat, and that turned on me. But I don't want to go down that road right now. I don't want to just be sitting here bitching about how people are either doing stupid shit or, you know, the way that they think when they post on social media. You know, I know all of you, our retro listeners, are excellent to each other, as we remind you to do all the time. So, you know, I don't want to go down that road right now. I've already done that yesterday on Facebook. I don't need to continue down that road. So what I'm worried about, though, is if I started to go deep dive into all the like stuff that happened on the European trip, that I would spend all of the time doing that versus actually talking about an essential movie. So what I'm going to try to do is see if I can record the next, say, 3 episodes today, if at all possible. You're not going to hear them until they get released, but it'll be in the order that I record. But what I wanted to do is break down the trip to the first off, the plane trip coming and going. Then, you know, what I got to see at, you know, the next one would be what I got to see in London, and the last one would be what I got to see at Amsterdam. So, you know, I could also talk about like the business stuff, but I don't know if that'll be as interesting for you as it was for me. So, let's just stick with the journey and, you know, the seeing the sights. So first off, you know, let's talk about the trip there, going out, flying to London. So we did, we flew to London, and then when we came back, we flew out of Amsterdam, coming back to Chicago. So the people that booked the flight, they had, and I was told that this was a smart way to do it. It was kind of rough to go through, but the plane had left Chicago at just shortly after 10 p.m. And with the time changes and tailwind, I guess we the flight itself was just over 7 hours. But we left at 10 p.m. and we arrived in London at about 11 a.m. Local time for London. So the game plan is, when you're traveling like that, is that, you know, it was like 11 a.m. on Sunday. So you, what you want to try to do is keep yourself awake and busy, and don't go to sleep until, you know, regular bedtime, you know, which is the local time. So that way you're getting less, you're getting acclimated to the time zone, and you're not as much jet lagged when you actually get to the office on Monday. So that was the game plan. So we had the afternoon of Sunday to fill before we went to went to the hotel and got some sleep. But like I said, I'll talk about, you know, what I saw in London on the next one. But the journey, I'll get to the point as to why I was just listening to Hush by Deep Purple in a minute, because that was more along the trip back. But the trip too, I was lucky enough to get a window seat, and I actually didn't have somebody next to me, so I was able to kind of really get as comfortable as you possibly could on United flight without, you know, having one of those own, your own private little pod. They do have in the seat in front of you, they have a little entertainment screen that has like all these movies. On the trip there, I had basically seen one movie, and I didn't even make it all the way through. I paused, I stopped it, then I woke up later and then saw the rest of it. I watched John Wick 3, Parabellum. Is that how you say that? Parabellum? Parabellum. Anyway, I thought that was a pretty kick-ass movie. I hadn't seen it before then. I'd seen 1 and 2, and I wanted to make time for it, so... yeah, that was really the only significant part of going, other than the, you know, do I let myself sleep? Do I try to stay awake? Knowing, you know, what's the best move to be ready for, you know, the acclimation to the time zone in London. So I was able to sleep some, obviously, because I only got really that one movie in. And I think I did watch a TV show. I think it may have been like in an episode of The Office. So it was somewhat not significant enough, really. There's probably, I don't even know why I went down that road. But I just wanted to let you know that, you know, I guess if you're going to travel out there and you have a business trip, that seems to be, what I'm always told is the smartest move is to try to book it so that you're leaving late night Saturday. You have Sunday to acclimate yourself, and then Monday you're good to go when you get to the office. But now the trip coming back, I had the aisle seat, and I had a lady that was sitting at the window, and I actually stayed completely awake the whole time for that flight, coming back from Amsterdam, you know, to Chicago. Interesting thing, though, the night before when we were in Amsterdam, the Amsterdam airport had gotten shut down for a little bit because they had something where they thought there was like a hijacking. And then later on, they rescinded the story to say that it was a misunderstanding by the pilot that called the alarm. So there was a little bit of drama there in Amsterdam before we left. And, you know, us being concerned, like, whoa, what's going to happen? So we're on the flight, and we leave Amsterdam, was it 9 a.m., I guess? Yeah, about 9 a.m. I'm sorry, that's wrong. 11 a.m. So it was around 11 a.m.-ish when we got out of there. So I had time for the leisurely breakfast and, to get to the airport. And the hotel we stayed at was right next to the airport. I'll share the hotel stories that, one of these other times, not this time. When I'm on the plane, I end up watching three movies, and one of them was Bad Time at the El Royale, and that was why I was just listening to song Hush by Deep Purple, because for those familiar with the movie, you know that that's when Chris Hemsworth kind of does this little dancing scene to that song. So it was stuck in my brain, and I'm not thinking about Chris Hemsworth with his shirt off. I'm just, digging the song. And that was what, released 1968. So it's really not in our, the decades that we cover. So the interesting part about the trip is because you're right next to the person that, right next to somebody, and you can see what they're watching. And the lady that I was sitting next to, we really didn't talk. She had offered some Pringles to me. I'd offered her a stick of gum. The only other time that she really talked to me was when she asked me to get up so that she can go to the bathroom. She seemed nice enough. We just didn't really have much dialogue. But when I looked over and saw what she was watching, I saw that she was watching A Star Is Born with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. And by the time I had noticed, it was near the end of the film. And for those familiar with that movie, you know that that's a bit of a tearjerker. And sure enough, the waterworks started for her. She actually turned her head where she was facing more towards the window than like facing forward. So I knew that, she was kind of embarrassed, I guess, because she was probably crying a bit. She was, by the way, she was wiping her face. I could tell that the movie had affected her as it had me when I had seen it. That was kind of sweet. But at the same time, it's like I almost wanted to reach over and go, pat her on the hand or something and say, there, I know exactly what you're going through. I've seen that movie before. The movies that I was watching was definitely not, was more of the action type, because I watched Alita Battle Angel and Bad Times at El Royale, and then that, the Hollywood movie that Quentin Tarantino just released, whatever that's called. I keep forgetting the name. And then the movies that I was watching, all of them were a really great way to pass the time. The flight back, I just wanted to share the bit about making sure that you stay up when you get to your destination over there, just so that you can acclimate yourself to the time zone. If you don't build in that buffer, I think that's probably what everybody tells you, that's a bad idea because you're going to experience jet lag. But I do like the fact that I had kind of a whole arsenal of musical choices and TV choices and movies, for that trip, because I had preloaded my iPad with Netflix stuff and TV shows that were on the DVR that I had downloaded and made available on my iPad, so that I could fill that time, not knowing that I was going to have a whole library of stuff right there on the seat, and I never even touched my iPad. So all that being said, that was the journey coming and going. Just wanted to bring that up and kind of share some things. I'll dig deep a little bit more into what I get to see at London and Amsterdam and some stuff about the hotels on the subsequent Essential Movie podcast episodes. So I've talked way too long about this and not what we plan to be talking about, which is the 1980s Essential Movie. So let's go ahead and insert our bumper here.
This is 80-something podcast.
Banzai! Banzai! Banzai!
Banzai!
Hey, where's the meat?
I don't think there's anybody back there.
You or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Ghostbusters! Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you!
and knowing is half the battle.
G.I.
Joe! It to each other. And party on, dudes!
Hey, this is Dave, and this is Banzai Retro Club, and we really appreciate you tuning in and downloading us and taking a listen. What I am doing is I am going to be covering our next 1980s Essential Movie episode. For those of you that are a little bit familiar with what's going on with these Essential Movies, then I don't have to tell you. For those that are brand new to the podcast and just checking us out, what you should know is that on RottenTomatoes.com, I found a list of 1980s essential movies. This was put out by their editorial staff. I'm counting down from 140 to 1 and talking about each one of these movies. The fun part is that I'm trying my best not to do an abundance of research or any research, and I'm not going to bring up Google and or IMDb on my computer and read stuff verbatim, because hell, you can do that on your own and you don't need me to do that for you. So that's the premise, and the challenge here has been that I'm going to cover every one of these movies, even if I've seen them or not. So that's the fun part, is how do you do an episode of a movie that you haven't seen? So far, I've been able to do that. Let's see if I can continue down this road and see where it takes us. So we are on number 98, which you would have known if when you clicked on the title of the episode, and we're covering Wall Street, 1987. So as I've done before, is I am going to... insert the trailer here.
From the director of Platoon, Wall Street.
The stock is plummeting. When it hits 18, buy it all.
Something big is going down. I want to know where he goes and what he sees. I want you, pal, to fill out the missing picture.
Mr. Gecko, that's not exactly what I do.
Where you can trade your honor.
I could lose my license. That's inside information.
For power.
If you're not inside, you are outside.
I know what this guy's all about. Greed.
There is no nobility in poverty anymore, Dad.
Greed is good. Greed works.
What makes you tick, bud?
The fear of being poor. That's all gonna change. Because I'm catching the express.
All right, Mr. Gecko. You got me.
Trade your peace of mind.
What's in it for moi?
More money than you ever dreamed of.
Just the beginning, pal.
If any trouble does arise, you are on your own. The trail does stop with you.
For a piece of the action.
The richest 1% of this country owns half our country's wealth, $5 trillion.
All it takes is a little inside information.
I don't care where or how you get it.
I think you owe me.
And you can trade everything you believe in.
He's using you, kid. You're too blind to see it.
For everything you've ever wanted.
I got a strange call from the SEC. They asked to see my records. This is heavy, bud.
I don't know where you get your information, son, but I don't like it.
Michael Douglas.
Why do you need to wreck this company?
Because it's wreckable, all right?
Charlie Sheen.
When does it all end, huh? How many yachts can you water ski behind? How much is enough?
Daryl Hannah.
You may find out one day that when you've had money and lost it, it's much worse than never having had it at all.
Martin Sheen.
What I see is a jealous old machinist who can't stand the fact that his son's become more successful than he has.
What you see is a guy who never measured a man's success by the size of his what?
An Oliver Stone film. Wall Street.
And then next up, what I'll do is I will say, hey Google, tell us about the movie Wall Street.
Wall Street is a 1987 movie directed by Oliver Stone, starring Oliver Stone, Michael Douglas, and Charlie Sheen.
Hey Google, give us a synopsis of the movie Wall Street.
Here's the synopsis of Wall Street. On the Wall Street of the 1980s, Bud Fox Charlie Sheen is a stockbroker full of ambition, doing whatever he can to make his way to the top. Admiring the power of the unsparing corporate raider Gordon Gekko, Michael Douglas, Fox entices Gekko into mentoring him by providing insider trading. As Fox becomes embroiled in greed and underhanded schemes, his decisions eventually threaten the livelihood of his scrupulous father, Martin Sheen. Faced with this dilemma, Fox questions his loyalties.
That is a really decent synopsis. So I love this movie. I really do. And maybe, you know, back in the 80s, I was into, you know, the way we would label it as the anti-hero, Michael Douglas, and, you know, the power that he was portraying, bought into the whole yuppieism kind of a thing. But, I mean, obviously the message of the film is kind of warning you against going down that road. But I remember in the 80s and the 90s, that was kind of the, you wanted all that. You wanted to have the power. You wanted to have the nice things. You wanted to, you know, the power suits. Fast cars, beautiful women. You wanted to be like that. Or I did. So I really, I kind of get the allure of that. And I think to a large part, a lot of that had held with me, throughout the years. So just from a, you know what, let's stick to the movie first, and then I can give my personal perspective. It doesn't matter what I do. My own observation is that maybe, 5-6 years ago, I had gotten to the point where I was moving, where I was a manager, and I was trying to become a director. And I tried really hard to become a director at the company I was at, which was Comcast Cable. And for whatever reason, the VP at the time did not see me in that light, so he did not pick me for the director position. They brought somebody else from the outside. And that really, really irked me to no end. So a lot, there was a lot of evaluation and, where do I have to go or what do I have to do? You know, because I had spent at that time, whatever it was, 14 years at Comcast. And, I was like, I'm not going to be able to go any further in my department. And that's really the only department that I knew really well. And, I saw what, where the directors worked at and all the perks that they had and the travel. And I was like, that's what I need to have. Now, fast forward to my current station in life, which is what I have told before is I'm a supervisor, but in some ways I'm also a manager. It's the try not to get too hung up on the job title, but, I'm managing people. And to this day now, I don't think I want the director spot because I've seen all the extra work that is involved to having that position. It's not just the, you get to jet around, to different countries, or you get to get, have special privileges by going to all these vendor meetings and, getting the free stuff from the vendors and, all of that stuff. The allure of that comes with a lot of work. And then there's also a lot of time commitment away from, fun things like, i.e. podcasting or your family. And I'm now at the point where I've gotten old enough where I'm like, I don't think I want to put myself in a position where that's required of me. Maybe I'm good right where I'm at. I'm happy with what I'm doing. I'm really starting to love what I do now versus where I was at previous companies. So I don't think I think I've now gotten to the point in my life where I'm like, I don't need the corporate jet. I don't need the, you know, gobs of money. Well, it'd be nice to have the gobs of money, but I don't need to sacrifice my recreation and my, you know, time with my family and those type of commitments for that job. I don't need to do that. That's not necessary anymore. So right now I make a, what I'd say, a decent living. I'm able to support my family, and I'm going to be happy with that. I'm going to be happy with where I'm at right now. And, you know, if something, a higher position comes along, and I'm offered it, I'm actually going to have to pause and think about it. Not that anybody's giving me a job offer, you know, for, or a promotion yet. I mean, I just got it at the company, but nonetheless, I see what those guys have to do. And I see, you know, when you even get to like the VP level of things, you know, that it almost feels like those guys have a revolving door at any company I've been at. And I don't need that kind of drama. I've already been through that kind of drama. I don't need any more of that. So maybe I just keep on doing what I'm doing and what I feel comfortable at, and, you know, be happy. So Wall Street right now, the message of this movie it's not as appealing to me as, you know, the power suits and all that stuff. I mean, hell, I got a job now where I get to wear jeans and tennis shoes every day. I love that. Absolutely love that. But, you know, corporate America is changing a bit. So there's a bit more, you know, balance with active lifestyle and casualness. But now, I went way off base there with my own personal opinion. Wall Street, back to the movie. What I want to do is, what I think is a very significant part of the movie, is there's a speech that Gordon Gekko gives, which is called Greed is Good. I'm going to insert that here.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity you're giving me, Mr. Cromwell, as the single largest shareholder in Teldar Paper, to speak. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're not here to indulge in fantasy, but in political and economic reality. America has become a second-rate power. Its trade deficit and its fiscal deficit are at nightmare proportions. Now, in the days of the free market, when our country was a top industrial power, there was accountability to the stockholder. The Carnegies, the Mellons, the men that built this great industrial empire made sure of it because it was their money at stake. Today, management has no stake in the company. Altogether, these men sitting up here own less than 3% of the company. And where does Mr. Cromwell put his $1 million salary? Not in Teldar stock. He owns less than 1%. You own the company. That's right. You, the stockholder, and you are all being royally screwed over by these bureaucrats with their steak lunches, their hunting and fishing trips, their corporate jets and golden parachutes.
This is an outrage. You're out of line, Gekko.
Teldar Paper, Mr. Cromwell, Teldar Paper has 33 different vice presidents, each earning over $200,000 a year. Now, I have spent the last 2 months analyzing what all these guys do, and I still can't figure it out. One thing I do know is that our paper company lost $110 million last year, and I'll bet that half of that was spent in all the paperwork going back and forth between all these vice presidents. The new law of evolution in corporate America seems to be survival of the unfittest. Well, in my book, you either do it right or you get eliminated. In the last 7 deals that I've been involved with, there were 2.5 million stockholders who have made a pre-tax profit of $12 billion. Thank you. I am not a destroyer of companies. I am a liberator of them. The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind, and greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Thank you very much.
Now, the reason why I wanted to insert that is because I think it's such a very powerful definition of the Gordon Gekko mindset. Where you do so much and push yourself so much to get more money and to get more power that you justify it in your mind. And I think Gordon's character does that. He'll, even though he can justify doing all of this, you know, taking companies, ripping them apart, selling off the chunks, and, you know, making it so that, you know, the employees no longer have a job to work at, he can justify it in his mind as that's the right thing to do. He's an interesting character to watch and see the evolution of. And Charlie Sheen does a really great job of, you know, picking him as his mentor and being that guy to mold and in some cases be like Gordon Gekko. Another fun part of the movie is you've got Charlie's real dad, Martin Sheen, in here, and he is playing, you know, the voice of reason, the hey kid, just be happy where you're at kind of thing, kind of like I was talking about a little bit earlier. And maybe I'm at the age that I can relate to what Martin Sheen was saying in that movie. So I can relate to what, you know, his delivery and what he brought to the movie. He's a guy hardworking at that, it was an airline, and just doing his thing. And I believe he was a union boss, wasn't he? I think he was. And, you know, that was kind of his station, and he was content. You know, it was like, you know, we can handle the problems that the company is having. We've been through this kind of thing before. We're going to do it again. We don't need somebody like Gordon Gekko to come in and help out. But, you know, nobody listens to him. They go along because they're seduced by the Gordon Gekko type, and, you know, they want to turn it around, and it ends up biting them in the butt. And then Daryl Hannah is also in this one, which I think she plays an interesting part, being the hot woman that Charlie Sheen, you know, associates with the power, success, money, and, you know, she's, you know, almost who he, you know, almost, you know, where to the point where he covets her just as much as he does the power and the money. She plays an interesting role, though, where she's, you know, if I remember right, an interior decorator, and buying stuff for rich people, you know. So I do remember that part of it. I don't remember how the relationship ended with Daryl Hannah and Charlie. Maybe when he had to go to jail. Maybe she cut it off. I don't remember. Or did Daryl Hannah have something going on with Michael Douglas's character? Been too long since I've seen it, so it's getting vague in those details. But yeah, I do love this movie, and I do see why it's an essential 1980s movie. I'm thinking it's 98 right now. Is that a good spot for it? Maybe it should be a tad higher. Because I mean, it's Oliver Stone. Did a really kick-ass job with presenting this movie. The other thing that I really enjoyed about, you know, the allure of this movie is if you ever watch a current movie called Boiler Room that had Vin Diesel in it, you know, they actually are like a whole bunch of young bucks that are traders, and they – you know, they kind of covet the Gordon Gekko, and they have the movie memorized. So, you know, there's one scene where they're all sitting around eating pizza and watching Wall Street. And every time Gordon Gekko comes on, they're all quoting the lines, almost as if it was like Rocky Horror Picture Show or something. So, yeah, Wall Street, loved this movie. That was great. I definitely agree that it's an essential movie. So if you haven't, go out there, go check it out. I'm definitely recommending. So with all that being said, I just wanted to remind everybody we have a website. That's BanzaiRetroClub.com. That's B-A-N-Z-A-I, RetroClub.com. On that website, you're going to get links to, first off, our visual guide, which is in the blog section. This is a visual guide to all of our essential movies that we've done to date. So if you want to just go scroll through that and see the movie posters of the different episodes, you can click on them, click on the movie poster, and it'll get you to the individual episodes. Might be a little easier versus scrolling through your podcast app. Speaking of podcast apps, if you're on Podbean, we really appreciate all of the followers that we're picking up on that app. You guys are fantastic. We're well above 500 followers on Podbean, so you guys continue to kick ass, take names, and we love you for it. For all of our, you know, for everyone else that's on the other podcast listening apps, we appreciate you as well. We just don't have a way to understand how many of those we have. So if you are listening on Spotify or iHeartRadio or iTunes, you know, if you're able to do a follow or leave a comment, we'd appreciate it. I don't routinely log into our site on those particular podcast websites, so I don't know if, you know, we are picking up followers or not. Podbean is the one that hosts us, so it's easy to go in there, take a look just to see how many downloads we're getting. So I probably spend more time looking at that, and that's where I started to notice that we were getting more followers. If you want to shoot us an email, you want some commentary, you want to give me some feedback on Wall Street, how you feel about that, and Gordon Gekko and Greed is Good, go ahead, shoot me an email. That's McFly@BonsaiRetroClub.com. Or if you want to shoot me a tweet, that's at Bonsai Retro Club. So any feedback would be appreciated. And then, you know, of course, a rating review on iTunes, if you can do that for us, we'd appreciate it. Now that I've said all of that, I'm going to go ahead and remind everybody, please be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Bye-bye.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 On the next episode, we're going to be talking Working Girl, 1988.